Let's say a little bit more about the Agras. So we mentioned the Agra de Beit Hamya, and that was an important one. I mentioned what I thought was Pshat. There are those who say that the Agra de Beit Hamya is about the Ovel. Rav Yoshev says like that, that it's about the Ovel being Mekabel, his guy's Hardin, the idea of Tzidek Hadin, that the Ovel is Mekabel, Vishtika. Perhaps that's the idea of Vayidom Aaron. In general, you know, that's also a part of the whole question that I've had on the idea. They say that a moment of silence is a chuk zagayim. It's hard to understand because it may not be the only pshat, but the idea that there's no tradition of silence in the expression of mourning in the Jewish tradition. So I find that hard to understand. It's not the only pshat, but it's a possible pshat in Vayidom Aaron. It's a possible pshat in Agra de Beit Hamishtika. It's not the only pshat, but it's certainly a possible tradition. But I mentioned last time that I thought also the pshat was, like the Maharsha says, that it's related to the idea of the notion of Ein HaMonachim and Rishoyim Ladaber as Yiftach Ovel Tchila. And why is that significant? You know, it's a halacha that sounds like an obscure din that people aren't necessarily even aware of. And we mentioned why that's much more significant than it seems, even if people aren't aware of it, because the entire success or failure of your Nichum Aveilim can hang on it. That if you come in with your pre-prepared speech and you're not at all attuned to the state of mind of the Avel, so then you may completely fail at Nichum Aveilim. And if you're silent first and then listen and get a sense of what is appropriate to say, so then what you say will be properly calibrated. So even if we assume that the mitzvah is in the talking, and hence the name Beit Hamya, which Rashi, not here, but Rashi in Sanhedrin, tells us that the phrase comes from Matim and Oso Bedvarim. So even if we assume that it's a phrase that specifically refers to talking, therefore it seems somewhat ironic or paradoxical that we should say that the schar for the talking comes from the shtika, but perhaps no, it's that the schar of the talking will be assessed by the shtika that precedes it. So, okay, Amar Mar Zutra, Agra de Tanisa Sidkasa. So that's also an important point, that one shouldn't mistake the means for the ends, so that the point of a tainis is the tztaka. So here, tztaka in both senses of the word, tztaka in the sense of the charity, but also in the sense of the tzidkus, you know, that, so Rashi says here, the charity, shenosin tztaka, le'erev, le'parnasas haniyim, shesanu hayom. So then you give tztaka at night, because it sounds like it means that day, the haniyim who fasted that day, so you sustain them for when they come to buy food. But also the righteousness. So whether you're talking about the literal tzedakah or the righteousness overall, but the point is that fasting is a means to an end. It's a way to direct you towards character change. So certainly it's true for the fast days that are ordained as actual fast days, but also those days that are not fast days on the calendar and one is looking for a method of tshuva. So if it's fasting, great, but also to appreciate that that is a means to an end, and that may not always be the most effective means to an end. So for example, in the literature about Sefer Torah falling, where it talks about fasting, so the Svarim will say that that is advocated, below hasak v'tainis ikur, that that's not the main point. The point is that you should be looking for methods of tshuva and to understand that that's the point. It's a means to an end. So here also, then the Gemara continues, Amr of Sheshes, Agrid Hesped de Daluye. So the schar of a Hesped is the tears. And that's a significant point also to understand that when giving a hesped, so it's meant to be evocative of mourning, that that is the purpose. It's meant to convey emotion and to evoke emotion. And that's why the prohibition applies on certain days of the year, happy days of the year. So I often cite, I mentioned this at my father's funeral because it was a point that he felt was important, that so the certain days of the year that are Surim Behesped. So it's a question, so does that mean that if a funeral takes place on those days, that one shouldn't say anything at all about the Nifter? So there are different traditions about that, and you know, so I just wrote about the subject of Harama, so the question is it a Harama to find some other way to say something about the Nifter? So not necessarily, because the question is also what exactly is the issue. So something that my father would point out, that there's a difference between the word that's used in English and the word that's used in Hebrew. That eulogy is not a direct translation of the word hesped. That hesped comes from spade, and you see halachically that it's meant to correspond to daluye, it's meant to correspond to tears. That's the point. And here Rashi translates, Daliye laharim kol b'lashon nehi v'agmas nefesh yivku hashomim. That's the halachic definition of a hesped and the halachic purpose of a hesped. So that is inconsistent with the purpose of certain days of the year, which are asurim behesped of Atinus. But the word eulogy from the original Greek, so eu, is a word for good. So euthanasia is supposed to be a compassionate death, and EU in general is a word, is a prefix that means good. Euphemism. So, sorry?
Euphemism.
Right, euphemism, a nice way of saying things. So EU, eulogy, is nice words. So the word, the phrase means to say nice things about people. So it's not a direct translation of hesped, and the idea is that just because you're not supposed to be masped on those days, that didn't necessarily translate to you shouldn't say nice things about somebody. It's two different dinim. So to say nice things about somebody, not b'derech hesped, thought is theoretically possible. So that's a whole discussion. But again, there are different attitudes. There are those who on those days will say Rosh Chodesh, Hanukkah, days like that, will only say Tehillim. But again, that's a question how to relate to this concept. And Amravashi Agra de Behilula Mile. So here, the schar for a wedding is correlated to the words here. So this is also a fascinating idea. Again, you see what we've been seeing throughout. To pay attention to all of these agras, they're very fascinating. The idea that each one of these chasadim or activities is measured specifically by this one midah that is, or this one metric that is being invoked. So the idea of mile, specifically in the context of chasana. So the whole notion of the mile to begin with is fascinating, and this is an allusion to the Gemara in the second parak of Ksubis, locates the Meraktim Lufne Hakala, and there the Gemara says, Kalanov Chasuda, but the wedding, the bands, they don't tell you that that's only one opinion. It's the opinion of Beis Hillel, and for whatever reason, they don't mention Beis Shammai's opinion, Kala Kamoshihi. But we paskin like Beis Hillel, there's a Kalanov Chasuda. So it's an interesting question, first of all, Bechlal, why it's so important to say anything, and here the Gemara is saying that that's going to be the whole metric of the Schar. But also the idea that we should say specifically Kalanav Chasuda, and in light of Beis Shammai's objection, that Beis Shammai says, well, maybe you're not so impressed, and doesn't the Torah say Midvar Sheker Tirchak, and there's a lot written about that and the whole nature of the machlokas over there, because especially if you consider Beis Hillel's response, Beis Hillel's response doesn't seem to go directly to the inyan, because you could have thought there's a lot that you could say in response. First of all, it seems to be a serious question, as to whether the prohibition of Bidvar Sheker Tirchak would even apply in this case. It seems that a lot of Rishonim probably wouldn't have thought so. So the application of Bidvar Sheker Tirchak in such a situation is surprising. But the nature of Beis Hillel's response is particularly fascinating. His response basically is, come on, be a nice guy. That's essentially what it boils down to. And his response is, La'ola mihei daito shaladam urevis mabrias. A person's attitude and opinions should always be one that gets along with people. So that whole mahalach is itself interesting. Question.
Doesn't paskening like actively paskening like Beis Hillel mean that now saying that is worthless?
No, because it means that it has a certain meaning to it, which is itself a message that something to be said. So how you understand that, I think, has a lot to be derived and a lot to be teaching us. But to focus on that itself for a second, so you could ask two questions. So the point that Hillel is making, that he's not worried about Beis Shammai's objection, and you could also ask even beyond that, you know, of all the midos we could be talking about, how come we pick this one to focus on? You know, is this really what we are telling Chassan and they should care about the most? Is this really what we put at the top of our list of shiduchim factors? So I'll tell you why I think this is what we talk about and why we're not worried about Beis Shammai's issue, among other reasons. I think that this is something which, and this is also important advice both for people dating and people advising people dating, is that this is a factor which is completely subjective, and no one else should be weighing in negatively for anybody else, because the mentality that a person has can completely dictate the truth. So, therefore, Chazal advised that people, Beis Hillel advised that the guests at a chasana say kalnav chasuda, because they knew there was no possibility of it being sheker, because by definition, if they convinced the chasana it was true, it became objectively true.
Oh. And what if you mutter to say kalnav chasuda, and I pass him like Beis Shammai?
I don't know about that, but the point is that even without going into Beis Shammai, the point is that it is objectively true if the Chassan believes it, and therefore there is no possibility.
The Chassan is the one saying.
They say, the people at the wedding say it to the Chassan.
Okay, but they're not the ones, like,
if they convince the Chassan that this is true, so there is no risk of falsehood, and
the
they are accomplishing.
They're
accomplishing
what they're
something.
Saying.
They're accomplishing something by convincing the Chassan that this is true. So therefore, what Beis Hillel was accomplishing was that this is objectively a valuable goal, and there's no possibility of it being false. If they were to say that she's a tzaddikus, if they were to say that he's a tzaddik who never gets mad, and it turns out that he does, so then they'd be misleading her. If they say that she's a tzaddikus who will never do anything wrong, and it turns out that she will, so they'd be misleading him. But here, if they convince him that this is true, then it's objectively true by definition.
I understand, but they're the ones saying it. So if it's not true for them, then it's not true.
No, it doesn't matter. They convince him that this is what he should believe.
But they're the ones saying it.
So that, therefore, it becomes true.
But it becomes true for him.
Yeah, that's right. That's what matters.
I understand, but I don't think we normally apply that in any other cases of lying.
It doesn't have to, because it's not lying. It's true for the purpose that it needs to be true for.
But of qualifying what is a lie.
For the purpose that it needs to be true for, it's true. For him.
Okay, but let's say in a dharma, right? Where I think it's a dharma.
It's subjective, that's why.
I understand. But if I can genuinely convince you that this desk is in fact a refrigerator.
No,
it's subjective.
But it's not. It either is a desk or a refrigerator.
But I'm saying, but for me, I know it definitely isn't a refrigerator.
No, but that's not comparable. That's not a refrigerator. This is not something that has an objective definition.
Okay, fine. So
this can be proven, that the degree of attractiveness a person finds in his spouse
but they're not the, but
is
he's not the
defined.
One, the husband isn't the one saying it.
No, but he has to believe it. He's going
to
be
believed. I know he has to believe it, but the people saying it don't have to believe it. They're the ones saying that.
Believing it's true for his purpose. That he should find her Na'a v'chasuda. That's what it means.
They're convincing him subjectively. And that's all that's important, because it needs to be true for him. It doesn't matter if it's true or not for them.
But they're the ones that are making the statement.
To him.
So you're reframing it as okay.
That's all that matters.
Is Rebbe saying that the guests are not in fact saying, I think she is Kalanav of Chasuda, but rather that they are saying, oh, you should be so happy that they are convincing him that
she is Na'a v'Chasuda.
Okay, fine.
And that's all that matters. And that becomes objectively true. So there is no possibility that is not true. There's no possibility that they are misleading her. So, and they are able to create that through their words. And that, it's a book worth looking at called Useful Delusions, which documents how that is actually Metzius. So there's a lot of nafkaminas of that. So first of all, people do massive, massive harm every day in Shiduchim by weighing in on people's attractiveness. And that is in negative ways, and that is the textbook definition of Lashon Hara. Ein lecha Lashon Hara gedayla mizu, because it is subjective in the extreme, so it's not like they're saying an objective fact, and it does massive harm of the most genuine and lasting ways. And people, for some reason, just write themselves a pass to do that every day in the world of Shiduchim. I have no idea where it comes from. Textbook Lashon Hara of the most serious nature. Yeah.
So I guess how do you, with taking this approach, how do you understand Beis Shammai then? I mean, if you say something negative, like, yes, she's ugly, but it's true.
I don't think Beis Shammai means that. I think Beis Shammai says to say something else true.
Just
avoid the issue.
Yeah. I will acknowledge there is one Rishon who understands Beis Shammai that way, and it's not my derech to ever say Rishonim were wrong. In this case, they think that there's no other way to read it. Well, I'm not even going to say.
Oh, and I want to read it.
I know. I'm still not going
to
say.
go through all of it, though.
Yeah, that would be good if it makes you go through every Rishon. But in any event, we don't pass them like that. But I think the Pashuk Shat Beis Shammai is, he means say something you can believe. Say, you know, she's got some other midah that you can praise. But I think people weighing in negatively on the attractiveness, when it's subjective, that's meisim b'chol yom, that causes a person to form a negative opinion of something that is completely subjective, and therefore they never meet somebody who they could have otherwise formed their own opinion about. That does incredible harm. Yeah.
This might be pushing it into a Sunday topic, but if someone were to ask, framing it that they already don't necessarily find the person they were set up with attractive, how would I go about responding?
Yeah, my opinion doesn't matter. Because it doesn't. You know, unless you can say something positive. You say, Kalan Lava Chasuda, but other than that, you know, no one else's opinion matters. It's true. Unless you can encourage them positively. So that's what Chazal, so that's one thing. So, first of all, I think this is something that Chazal realized you can, and Basila realized you can create a positive reality for people. Now, that's A. B, in terms of the Mila in general, whether it's about this Mida or about anything else, so as part of the broader question of Simchas Chasam and Kala, this and other things, so it's an interesting question why this mitzvah exists. And this aspect specifically, and the whole mitzvah broader, more broadly speaking. Because chasadim in general are about people who are in a bad place. And you might say that you're there to help them. So you're helped to visit the sick, or to comfort the mourners, or to host the displaced, or to feed the hungry. So chasen and kala are hopefully happy. So the idea that you're there to cheer up the happy, to to further happy, gladden the happy, it's an unusual chesed. It's an outlier in the pantheon of chesed. So there are a few interesting theories as to why this chesed of Simchas Chasam Kala exists. Some of it has to, and there's a, we'll see if we get to it today or next time, but there's a little bit more about this on the staff too, about Simchas Chasam Kala. May have to do it tomorrow. But the idea that there is a mitzvah specifically of Simchas Chasam and Kala is an interesting one. And just to focus specifically on the Mili, so I believe Rav Palm pointed out, maybe others pointed out, that, and this also goes to the Lashon Hara component, and both what the power of the good and the bad can do, is that sometime after the wedding, the Chasam and Kala are going to have their first fight. And that's going to create a tension. And things are going to be tested, and there's going to be a pressure. So it helps to have a reserve. It helps to have that just a little while ago, there was a large group of people who were telling the Chasam, telling the Kala, you're the luckiest person in the world, that this is the greatest person you ever could have picked. So to have that reserve, to have that built up, so that there's a protection against whatever fraying there could be from that first fight, is a big thing. So the opposite of that, if there was Lashon Hara, is a very damaging thing. And to have the positive is a very helpful thing. And it's also fascinating, you know, the Chafetz Chaim, when he speaks about, the Chafetz Chaim in general, when he speaks about Lashon Hara, so sometimes there's a mentality that he advocates a lifestyle that nobody can live up to. And he's very stark in the Shmiras HaLashon about how that's not the case and that everybody can adhere to these rules. So hopefully that's true. But the hardest part about his standards, not so much that they're hard to live up to, but that they sometimes require a little mind reading, because they require assessing exactly how you're going to get a reaction and what exactly people are going to do in response to what you say. So that's harder than sometimes what he asks you to hold back from doing. So if I'm not mistaken, in the context of Shiduchim, so he talks about how you're supposed to tell people what they need to know to make a decision. But if you have something negative that's not going to stop a Shiduch, so then you shouldn't say it. So the question is, how do you know exactly how to calibrate where it's at that level? So that's challenging. That's where you have to do mind reading to know exactly what's on that level. But it gets into some of this subjective stuff. But part of the point is that that's where part of the reason is that it can be damaging in that way, because if it's going to be relevant to the decision-making process, so then it's important for the person to know about. But if it's not going to be relevant to the decision-making process, they're going to go ahead with it anyway. But then, later on, when they have that first fight, so then they're going to say, oh, you know, they told me about you, that you were such and such. Or, you know, so then it stays in the head, and it ends up causing problems later. So now, again, how exactly somebody's able to be such a mind reader that they can figure out exactly how to calibrate what to say and not to say, that it's going to not be part of the decision-making process, but it's going to stay in the back of someone's mind to hurt later, is a good question. But just to know that that's a potential issue, and even though it may be hard to figure that out, but you see how the opposite is true here, that the positive stuff that stays in reserve is able to counteract that. So that's part of what the mitzvah of Simchas Chasam and Kala does, that it does the opposite of that. So all the good things that stay in somebody's mind, so that when there is a fighting later, when there is a tension later, so then everything that you're able to put in the reserve, so that the couple remembers, oh, okay, how lucky I am, so that when there's some kind of a tension later, that's able to serve as a firewall. Yeah.
Yeah. So also could maybe like that's on the topic maybe, but like so how do you like what's the balance between let's say Ruby said that if they're you know it's important for the shit-ups then you say something, but if they're already like you know together and then to like to be positive, like what if let's say it's a relationship and like you see red flags, you see like you know possibly harmful you know character traits in one of them, like is it your place to say something?
It's a highly subjective question, right? So it is not something you can answer on one foot, okay. Right? That's a very personalized question. It depends on the circumstances. So, and that's where I said it's part of the challenge of that, you know, the mind reading and the subjectivity. So that's a highly personalized question. But what helps us just for our Gemara, because our Gemara is going to talk about both here and a few lines down also, I'll probably be able to say a little bit more tomorrow, because Gemara is going to have more to say about some Chos and Kala. So that idea of what the positive advantage is, because again, you know, the question of why is there such a mitzvah here seems like an unusual kind of thing to have to do. So if you think about the Lashon Hara question is much more complex and much more of a judgment call, but the opposite, you can see how you serve a productive purpose there, and that's the case. So, okay. There's also just the fact, as pointed out, that man is a social animal. And Jewish man is especially a social animal. So as happy as it is for a chassan and kala to be able to have that experience, but if they have to do that alone, it's very hard. And therefore, the ability of people to be mishtatef through that is a very crucial part of being able to make that simcha genuine. And that was something that we spoke about a little bit, I think, at the beginning of this whole matzav, and I wrote about it, about the fact that the Jewish people have chosen, even in this very difficult time, to emphasize going ahead with weddings. I think we spoke about this a few times probably, and to emphasize the mitzvah of simchas chasan kala, despite the tremendous tsar and the fact that the atmosphere doesn't seem conducive, but the power of Klal Yisrael at this time has been very much emphasized, and the power of Davka, the Hishtatfus, and the Simcha of Klal Yisrael at the same time as the tsar is being felt so powerfully is something that has spoken very loudly as well. Okay, so I guess we should daven now. So probably tomorrow, I guess, this will be the